Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Victoria Lynn Hanu, a beacon for the creative and visionary first-time CEOs. With over 18 years in the corporate realm and over 20 years as an entrepreneur, Victoria understands the intricate journey of building a holistic business from scratch. Her background, marked by overcoming a dysfunctional family environment, has equipped her with unique insights into leadership, culture, and transformation. As the founder of Heart and Soul CEO and creator of the Rise Method, she empowers CEOs to embrace their authentic selves. A proud alumna of Metropolitan State University of Denver and a certified co-active coach, Victoria's mission is to uplift and champion others towards their own greatness. I've asked her to join us here today to share her story and talk about success, leadership, transformation, and becoming the CEOs we were meant to be. So Victoria, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you, Daryl. I'm awesome. And thank you for having me today. I'm really excited to talk to you and see what we can share with everybody else to help them on their journey.
Before we hop into what you've learned and what you do in the Rise Method and that, I always like to ask, how did you get started? And when I was looking, doing the research for the bio, I always often ask, is this a family business? It doesn't sound like it was a family business. It sounds like this is something that emerged from the home situation. Is that really accurate?
It emerged partially from the home situation as well as experience in corporate America, right? Because I have found that companies tend to mirror your families and your relationships there actually end up mirroring your families. And it is another microcosm of a family. And so it's out of those two things that I came to really working with teams. One taught the other, and the other was quite an adventure.
Yeah, I believe that. And that's actually, I almost agree with that wholeheartedly. And the nuclear family is the model for how people interact and engage with the outside world. So corporate, what were you doing in corporate? And then how did that lead to doing this?
So in corporate, my degree is in business management with an emphasis in quantitative analysis and minors in systems programming and systems analysis and programming. With that scientific background, as well as I am naturally a people person, and just the way I'm designed, I utilize human design in understanding myself as well as my clients. And in that process of going through corporate, I hit a wall where I realized we were values misaligned. My last company, we were values misaligned. And I got myself a coach. And it was like, oh, I can do this. At one point in time, I was laid off from one of the companies and went through that outplacement thing that they do with you and tested. And I tested high in therapy, psychology, and also high in systems analysis and design and business. So my journey over time has really been about integrating those pieces.
I love that. Can you explain? I'm a huge advocate. When I learned what systems thinking was, I think it was in Japan at the time, I fell in love with it. Can you describe, what does that mean? Systems, like design, systems analysis and programming.
Well, it's in some ways, it's a visual way of looking at things, how things are interdependent. And I'm specifically a relational thinker. All right. And relational thinkers, I designed when I was working in corporate, I would design databases. And in relational and system thinking is like, how does everything fit together? But the relational piece is being able to see how even disparate things can actually connect, how things actually work together. And so that's one of the things that I do with my clients is I can see what they're talking about and see how different things interconnect to get them right where they are in the problem that they have. And also, what do we need to connect to see the solutions? So that relational and systems thinking gives you a deeper understanding of what's going on. For example, in a system, so a family is a system. There are unconscious rules in a business. There are unconscious rules, unless the culture's been consciously designed, there are unconscious rules that are going on. You take a cog. So just like in a mechanical system, you take one thing and change it. It causes a ripple effect of change everywhere. And that's why people don't change a lot, is because that negative impact that comes, because when you change in people systems, other people don't like it because they have to change if they want to continue in relationship with you.
I think that's really smart. A good example is I just got a new puppy, and that's been an adjustment, but not a huge adjustment. We had a dog years ago, and so we'd already adapted, but in the absence of it, we had echoes of those behaviors. For example, as a family, we still did a morning and evening walk. That's been something my family's always done, a morning and evening walk. Now, depending on my work schedule, I don't always make the morning one, but I'm always there for the nighttime one. And now that we have the puppy, it's just fit in like clockwork, almost like you said, into that. And it's like my daughter's actually started, she's 4 turning 5. She started waking up earlier. She wants more time to wake with the puppy, but we've always tried to get her up early too. So I get what you're saying, where the introduction of one stimulus, the puppy, has created a cascade of events and effects. And that was something that really, there's a great book called 29 Master Plots. It talks about how all stories boil down to 29 basic plots. And in it, it was also just talks about the dynamics of a story. And people don't realize the more people you include, the more complicated it becomes. Because if it's, this is why there's so many orphans as heroes in the stories, because they don't have to worry about their parents. So like Harry Potter's like an orphan, and like they're always orphans in these cases. Spider-Man, his family's gone, and then his dad, his uncle died, and so it's just him and Aunt May, because there's a dynamic. It's not this relationship between A and B. If there's more than two people, there's A to B to A, and if there's C, then there's A person A to person B, person A to person C, person B to person A, person B to person C, and person C to both of them. And so it's like an exponential complicator. I don't think that's the right term, but I'm going with it. So it just, it complicates. It expands the complexity exponentially. There we go. Now I sound more intelligent.
Yes, it really does expand the complexity exponentially. But what it also does is it creates that family unit, or that business has its own identity. It becomes its own entity, literally. And unless people are really conscious, they can actually lose their identity within the whole of the number of people that are there, because they will interact with others in relationship to that entity versus as a holistic human being themselves. So it takes conscious awareness to be yourself in all situations with other people.
So this comes down to almost talks about defining culture and shaping culture within a family and in an organization. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. It is an absolute fair assessment, because that's some of what I do with my clients as we work through the process.
How do you do that? How do you do that? Because culture is somewhat intangible.
Culture can be intangible. However, if the leader is intentional about the culture behind and what they want it to create, if we start looking at conscious creation through intention and action and follow through, it moves you into that. But you have to intentionally understand what you want to create. And as a leader, you have the ability to influence. If you tap into your own power, you have the ability to influence the outcomes, because what we see outside is a mirror of where we are inside.
That's fire right there. I want to dive into that a little bit, because I don't know how many people fully grasp this. And I have a personal story, perhaps, where I my audience may or may not already know that I was adopted. I was an orphan. And I was very... you might call me a troubled child. Like, I would have to see the school counselor a lot because I acted out a lot and things. And I didn't fully understand why I was different, or I didn't think anything was wrong with me. Fast forward, I did this program, Katimovic, when I was 17. I got to travel Canada for 9 months. I lived with 10 other kids around my age, 17 to 21. We had a full-time volunteer job, and our house for our group. In the city that we were in, there would be a project manager that wasn't really a part of the group. They were like a supervisor leader, but they would basically sign us up to be volunteers for whatever was happening in the community. So we had full-time jobs, and then we were basically voluntold to do these community events every night of the week, and we'd only get basically one day off a week. And being exposed, and also every 3 months we would change, and during that 3 month period we would actually billet on our own with a local family and live with that family. And after 9 months of having lived with three other families and seeing how they interact and their family dynamics, and living with these 10 other kids and seeing like the dynamics that they brought to it, and just the wealth of experience I had, when I went back to my home, I recognized that I had changed. And because I had changed, the family that I was a part of had changed, and things became infinitely better. In a lot of ways, my life was before and after I did Katimovic. Because before, I was a problem child. I had attempted runaways. There was all sorts of things. Like, I think childcare services had come to my home before, but then when I came back, I'm like a straight A student. Family just functioned so much better. The dishes were done, all that. And it was a real eye opener for me that in terms of, by focusing on controlling the things that I could control, I could actually change the external world, and I would change things that I didn't even think I could influence. And that was such a powerful, that's just such a blessing of a lesson to have. And it just speaks to what you're saying, right? That people need to stop blaming and focusing outward and focusing more on personal responsibility, personal accountability, and becoming our better selves.
Absolutely. And that is an underlying piece behind, that's actually everything that's under the work that I do, because I work with the CEO, right? The first time CEO doesn't necessarily understand that they really have the power.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That they have the power to influence their entire organization, whether they were the founder and now becoming the CEO, or whether they've been hired by the founder to be the CEO, or somewhere in there along the line. It's really knowing that you can create an organization that mirrors what you want to do and the impact that you want, and to bring people on board. There's a company called DaVita, and it's kidneys. They do kidney dialysis, and they actually have their headquarters here in Denver. And their original CEO was quite eccentric and everything, but he had built what he called a village. And so their culture was that of a village. And one of the terms was drink the Kool-Aid, right? So you create a culture that's diverse with people. However, you're behind the same thing, that there's commonality in the values. Mm-hmm. Really, the values and purpose and impact are what bring everybody together. If you look at Yvon Chouinard with Patagonia, he's not the CEO. He hasn't been the CEO. He's hired CEOs at Patagonia because he didn't want to be the CEO. However, and it is a family business, and everybody follows along or they leave. Everybody is on board with the same value system.
I love that. I've said for years that I feel like business is very Shakespearean, because in all of Shakespeare's plays, the main characters fall victim to their greatest flaw. And I think that exactly like you said, for a lot of business owners, they may have great, it's not just product market fit, it's product market founder fit. And a lot of times you'll meet a business owner that's found product market fit, but the business doesn't fit the founder. And it's like the book report, they can't get done because they have no interest in the book. Like there's all sorts of issues like that. So I love that you said that. And I love that you're like, drink the Kool-Aid. And just as a recap, can you expand, what are values, purpose, impact? You said that brings people together. How do you have that? Is it just something you write on a piece of paper and put up on the wall?
Oh, no, you can't do that, because that was one of the things that came to me when I came out of corporate, was that values, the plaque on the wall or the plaque in the lobby, the values that are on that are not the values that you see. That's why you were asked about culture being intangible, something that's soft, because the values of a company will always mirror the leader's values. Mm. The culture will, unless they're really intentional. And values is about understanding that. So when you're a leader, you have to understand what your personal values are. And then how do those translate into your company? What is your personal purpose? How does that translate into the purpose that your company has? Because your company has one purpose and you have another one, and a problem that they get collapsed a lot of times. So that's where problems start going, is when that's not been conscientious and tangible, because people and larger companies especially go, here's our values. This is what, but they're not coming from here. They're not coming from the heart. And for impact, when we make impact in the world, a company can want to make impact in their local world by providing awesome employment and becoming really cool for that, and philanthropic. And what is the difference? Every company has an impact in the world, no matter whether it's good, bad, otherwise, right? Everybody has this impact. You have an impact. Let's be intentional. Let's be conscientious about it. And let's be conscious. What do you want to create? And their new CEOs coming up are more conscious about that. They want to be their kind of CEO, not like the old style ones where it's just work and money without purpose. Money's great. It's important for wealth, right? Everybody can have abundance. But if the focus is only money without impact, it's hollow.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I think if you're really in it for the long game, even if you don't have an ethical bone in your body, the only way to do business is to love on everybody, to love on your staff, to love on your customers, to love on your vendors. If you're hoping to do something that maybe has generational potential, because the world is evolving. And in today's world of transparency, it's really tough. I think right now we're seeing a lot of that shake out in terms of how mainstream media is losing the attention economy. The mainstream media is just dying off. It's like newspapers and the music industry, what happened to them? I think that we're due for a medical system reform for similar reasons. And I did a bunch of research in 2020. Everybody was arguing about the science. And the man that raised me worked in applied physics and geology, hard sciences. And so I've helped clients make an extra million. I've helped clients make an extra 100,000. And I had a client, we took her business from 1 million to 2.6 million. And then she almost got taken out by the IRS. And that was a shock to me, because I hadn't considered that more than marketing and sales and just making sure customers are happy are important to business. Like, I thought it's all about marketing and sales and having a good product or service. I'm like, it is, but at the same time, there's not, there's more complexity than that. And so when everybody was arguing about the science, it made me think, what is the science? What does the research say about business success? And I hired 10 assistants to help me go through all the academic literature we could get our hands on, hundreds, potentially thousands of studies. And we tried to look at all these studies claimed to be meta-analyses, validating like what moves the needle, right? All of them. And we pulled ones from Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, Thailand, Australia, America, Canada, all over the UK, all over the world. And they all claimed to have the definitive factors for business success. So I was like, all right, well, if we look at 1,000 of these that have the definitive factors of success, and we boil down the signal to noise ratio, what are the common denominators we're left with? And we found 8 critical success factors. They are self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skills, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. And everything fits into those 8 categories. And we broke each into its individual parts, right? So like cybersecurity fits into business operations, HR, right? Legal compliance. But to speak to, and that's a long way of getting around the barn to address what you're saying, one of the things that we found was really important for success in marketing strategies was brand integrity and trustworthiness, which means it's transparent, has a customer-focused, unique selling proposition, is authentic, consistent, and has a clear promise, purpose, and promise. And then the other part, which I was actually surprised by, not entirely, but I was, I guess you'd say proud, corporate social responsibility is positively correlated with success in marketing. That means community development, ethical values, and conforming to legal processes. So corporate social responsibility. And I was really shocked by that. And that's what I always saw, because that's when I grew up as a kid, part of what made me want to be an entrepreneur was my uncle in Toronto. He had retired young. He had a union job and retired young. And then he got into property management and a lot of different types of small businesses. And I remember every time we would visit him in Toronto, it was the godfather. Because every time we visit, there'd be neighbors coming by, bringing them flowers and stuff. And it's because he was like a property manager helping all these families and people. And I felt like he's making money getting paid. And he was one of the more affluent of my relatives. And he's helping all these people and they're coming and thanking him for his help and service and bringing him gifts. So that really fit with my paradigm of what a business is supposed to do and be. And I really value your perspective on that. So what would you recommend to someone who's starting out or struggling in terms of figuring this part of their business out?
One of the things that I would recommend is really if they're having troubles finding this part of their business out, the integrity and the values, is to get with someone like you or someone like me to really work on those aspects. And really, it's really about your personal part of it first, because everything else mirrors back. And to be able to hire people that are going to match your brand yep. promise and be in integrity, you've got to be in integrity with it and really clear on it for yourself as a leader, right?
Right, right.
Every stuff rolls downhill, right? It snowballs. Yes. If you think about it, it rolls downhill. And so many people try to fix it from the bottom up. And that's like slogging up a mountain of boulders that you can't get over, because unless the leader at the top buys in, nothing happens. You can try that. And change it from the bottom, right? But as the leader, as the CEO, if you're struggling with overwhelm, if you're struggling with bringing people on board to where you're going, chances are you're not clear on where you're going. You're not clear mm-hmm. on how your brand is connected to you. It's really about having the inside and the outside aligned. Mm-hmm. If one's mm-hmm. here and one's there, it's going to go like this. You yep. can talk up a great storm. You can push, you can market, you can do all this stuff. But if your people inside your company aren't treated like you talk they are on the outside, it's not going to match. And people can literally feel that.
Yes, they right? can.
You can have great sales and everything, but sales will go away if yep. the inside of your company and your outside aren't in alignment.
I love that. And that's so true. All a company is a group of people helping another group of people, and they do it via a product or service. Mm-hmm. So what do you think are some of the specific skills or behaviors that you believe are important to improve or develop?
The ability to reflect. Self-reflection is like the number one
yeah.
piece, ooh. Right?
Like, yeah.
You have to do that.
Yep. Yeah.
And you have to be aware of it. And so you can self-reflect all you want, but if you don't acknowledge externally to yourself, oh, here's the parts that don't work or the parts that are working, right? Either one, you have to be able to self-reflect. And then you also have to be able to acknowledge that. And you have to be able to receive feedback and not deflect, which means stepping into being secure enough and having people around you that aren't trying to please you and will tell you the truth and looking for the truth in what's going on. You need people beside you that do that.
And I've got $50,000 worth of research that is validating everything that you're saying. So I mentioned those 8 critical success factors. Everyone asks, what's the one to rule them all, so to speak? And I say it's the self-efficacy. And for us, we said to try to define what is self-efficacy. It's 3 categories. It's personality traits, leadership skills, and personal disciplines. And the personality traits are a locus of control, which you already mentioned. It's being a control freak about the things you can control and not worrying about the things you can't. Extroversion, openness to experience, agreeableness, conscientiousness, and acceptance of criticism and feedback. That is, there's 3 pillars of self-efficacy. That is the one pillar of self-efficacy. The second pillar of self-efficacy is leadership skills. And I was shocked for us in our research, and people may contest it, but vision was not part of leadership based on our research. Vision comes from market intelligence and strategic planning. Leadership skills are, spoiler alert, you already said it, self-awareness skills, communication cooperation skills, emotional intelligence, and adaptability. And based on our research, that is leadership. Because I always thought leadership could be this kind of like branding. Like people can get in, I sending love. I want to love on all the brand marketers out there, but I felt like brand marketing is where all the failed direct response marketers go. They can't, because direct response marketing is like, it's so transparent. It either worked or didn't. But brand marketing, here's our new logo. Here's our brand dress. Was it successful? Not. There's no way to really, it's a safe place to hide from the fire of failure, I should say. And it's, I'm sure it's, and I might get some hate mail. It's very important, and brands can be, there are billion-dollar brands. That is a different subject. But personality traits, leadership skills, and personal disciplines, like personal health, physical health, sleep, diet, fitness, mental health, time management, a commitment to improve, like a will to achieve, discipline, and a sense of urgency. Those are the pillars, self-efficacy in business. And what you said too, just, I felt articulated that, and I agree 1,000%. So what are some of the greatest mistakes you see your clients and other entrepreneurs making? We've danced around it, but let's really hit it on the head.
The biggest mistake that entrepreneurs, well, you hit on one, is not paying attention to the business operations, right? You're in business, you've got to pay attention to the business, but the main detractor and the biggest mistake that entrepreneurs, leaders make is doubt of themselves, negative thinking, mm-hmm. not and being closed to other people that are trusted advisors, right? Not growing. You've hit on a lot of them. And the reason people do this, and you mentioned personality, is as we're growing up, we're programmed in our mind as we're growing up when we're wide open up until about age 7. And then after that, then we start forming opinions based on that. And when we become adults, that personality, all those personality tests out there, they're just telling you how you were programmed. It's not right. Telling you who you are and all of that. So it comes back to that awareness and really identifying how you can show up for you. So really, doubt and going after what I say, bright, shiny objects, BSO syndrome is, here, okay, let's go over this, over there. And I've been guilty of it, right? Thinking you're wrong or your company is wrong about going the direction they're going without going, hey, wait a minute. What are we reacting to? Are we operating out of fear? And that's where doubt and fear are the biggest mistakes that not just leaders make, but everybody makes. And it comes from how we feel about ourselves and how we were programmed. Like what you did with your program, the difference between you when you got done with it and after it. Yep. That's what it's like. That's where they go wrong.
So what are some of the most important habits, whether they're weekly or monthly, that you think the most successful people you've worked with have in this respect?
They take care of themselves physically. They meditate or have quiet time, and they study and self-improvement. It really is that self-improvement, engaging with people that can help them stretch and grow.
So is this a finite thing? Is this an ongoing thing? Is this something, how does somebody know when they've arrived?
You don't. There is no arrival. Life is a journey, and we're constantly creating and growing. If we're expecting things to be stagnant and stay the same, people don't like change, but guess what's constant? Change.
Right.
There's this resistance because our subconscious likes patterns. We like patterns. We like comfort, right? And sometimes the known is more comfortable than the unknown.
I love that.
And so there's really this openness and this willingness to know yourself and to understand that there is no such thing as perfection, because everybody has a different definition of perfection.
Yep.
And compassion for oneself as you're going through the growth process.
And then my next question is, how is this, or is this changing? Right now, we have so much happening in the world. There's geopolitical issues at play. There's economic, global factors at play. We're in a culture shift as well. Some people, myself included, may feel that there is an unelected body of people who have a particular agenda they seem to be trying to enforce on the world. How do you see this affecting the factors that impact your industry? What trends are coming down the pipeline you're keeping an eye on that you think the audience listening may want to pay attention to as well?
The biggest trend that's coming down the path is that, one, people are a lot more aware and a lot more conscious of what's going on in the world. Some of it has to do with social media and everything else. But the biggest thing is, you said it already, when you came back, you learned that you could only control what you could control. And that is the key. We can only control what we can control. And when I work with people and what I experienced, even raising my, especially my oldest child, is we can't control other people. We can't control what they do. We are not responsible for their choices. We're not responsible for their emotions. We're not responsible for their feelings. We're not responsible for somebody else. We can only be responsible for us. And when we think, because so much our thoughts control so much, when we think ill about someone, then that feeds the negative side. Whereas if we allow them to have their journey and make our choices about whether we want to engage or not, or if you're thinking about something somebody else is doing wrong all the time, you're not making any changes in your immediate world where you can make a difference.
I love that. I love that so much. And I think a good example is just what we've gone through the last few years. And now a lot of people are situated with the governments have printed, Canada alone, in 2020 alone, 1 year, the Canadian government printed 50 years worth of their annual budget. So it's my personal opinion, I'm going to preface this with that, that there were no supply chain issues, because I talk to people all over the world and I live abroad and we didn't have supply chain issues. It's my personal belief that supply chain issues were really export imports being paused while governments tried to figure out what currencies were actually worth, because everybody had a printing frenzy. And so this is a sense of, that's something I can't necessarily control. We should talk about, discuss, obviously, get involved. But you can do, take care of yourself. You can control your debt load. You can control how much food you're buying. And actually, there's something like 30 foods that you buy at the grocery store you can replant the food scraps of in an indoor garden, even if you want, and then never have to buy those again, like garlic. You can buy a bag of garlic, plant a bunch of bulbs, or a bunch of the pieces of the bulbs, I guess you'd say. And then if you just know your cadence of how often you eat, you would never need to buy garlic again, ever. So there's things that you can control and there's things you can't control. And we need to talk about the things that we can't control, I think, to a certain extent. But I think it's like an 80-20, where the 80% of our results will come from controlling the 20% of what's going on that we can control so much. And I think that is such a powerful message of empowerment for people here.
Exactly. And the key is, there are always going to be things going on outside of you that you can't control. And it's your response to those. It's how you make those look and how you experience those, because you're in control of your experience of these situations. And you can either look at them as problems and go down that rabbit hole, or you can look at, what are the opportunities here? What can I do that will help me be resilient, will help my business be resilient? Did I create a culture in my company where we can be resilient and be innovative in addressing new situations that we have no control over?
Yep. And I think a lot of it too is getting clear on the problem you solve. So here's a great example. Let's say you install pools. That is like a one-time thing. People typically don't get 2, 3, 4 pools. They get a pool. So some people may feel that they're limited. There's a season for it. And outside that season, I need to have a second job. But if you understand the problem that you're solving is people are trying to turn their home into a self-sufficient resource in itself, where we don't need to go to the beach, we don't need to go to the community pool, and we can entertain people when they come over. It improves the aesthetic of the property and the value of the property that I built. You've really focused on the problem you solve. Now, as the pool person installer, when you make that contact, that is just the first purchase. There's something called the value ladder, right? And you can have additional products and services. And what a lot of business owners don't realize, you don't even need to be the one. Like, this is so common in contracting. A contractor bids on a job, gets the job, and then turns the job into pieces of work, mini projects, and subcontracts those out. So you could be, and then of course they have to maintain quality. You could be the pool installer and you get that lead and you install the pool and you make that money. And then you find out what else they need. Do you need landscaping? Did you want to build a patio? Hey, you need to have a fence to comply with bylaws, swimming lessons for the kids. Do you need a maintenance package on the pool? Do you need it winterized? Do you need us to open the pool? Hey, the downspouts from your roof are spilling all these leaves into the pool, which is causing more strain on the pool equipment. You're going to have to replace the pump more often. Do you need to get your gutters fixed? All of a sudden, your one purchase could turn into a string of 10 purchases. You are the relationship. You're handling the relationship. You're closing the deal. You're the representative. You're collecting the money and subcontracting to them. And this is all within your control. And in just 3 minutes here, I've spelled out how a pool installer on their own could have a succession of sales and turn what might be a seasonal relationship, I knew them for a month, into potentially like a lifetime thing.
Exactly. Right? And one of the things you didn't mention even on that is, do you really want to have access to your pool year round? Okay, let's put a greenhouse cover over it so you can access it.
Yeah. I'm from Canada. How valuable would that be if you had a pool you could use year round? You dig a hole deep enough in the earth, it is the same temperature all year round. Doesn't matter if there's frost on the ground or not. So this is stuff that, again, a lot of people don't think about that. And a business, as we said, like, you never go to McDonald's and they're like, sorry, Sally's sick today, drive-thru's closed. Like, the business exists to solve a problem in the community. And that's the problem with monopolies, is when we have monopolies, there was a documentary, I wanted to mention this earlier, there's a documentary called The Corporation, and they did a psych evaluation on companies. They took like a list of bunch of companies. I think it was like 20 companies. I probably have this wrong, but I think they took 20 companies and they performed a psychological evaluation on them. And these were, a lot of them were monopolies. And they're like, they're psychotic. They're just, they would be sociopaths if these were people. But that's not how small and medium-sized businesses operate. Small and medium-sized businesses don't operate that way, right? We're still very flat, very grassroots, very in touch with our customers. We've all been on the line with like our phone company, and it's like the one of two options, and they don't treat us like they should. And we hate that. And that's where we need more options. We need more small and medium-sized businesses. We need diversity. And so a lot of people, again, they got to think about, what is the problem you solve? How do you solve that better? Have conversations with your customer base. This is such a great call. I've got a couple pages of notes.
Exactly. The thing is, you know what? In the last, we could design an entire business solution. You and I have just done that pretty much. And we can add to that too, as far as offerings and stuff.
If anybody listening to this has a friend who installs pools, you got to send them this interview. And even if you have a friend that doesn't install pools, but they have a business, you probably should send them this interview, because this is like, a lot of business owners are living quiet lives of desperation. I talk about this with a lot with my clients, because let's say you have a dry cleaning operation, and with your dry cleaning operation, you got to pay your kids' school fees. You got to pay your bills. You're trying to save something for retirement. Maybe you have to take care of your parents. You're paying their medical bills or something like that. And then there's so much weight on your shoulders, and everything depends on that dry cleaning service. And maybe you're a great dry cleaner. You're the best in the world. But if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, doesn't make a sound. You need to have high quality products and services, but if you're unknown, no one can do business with you. So if a business is having a downturn, what are they going to do? Are they going to go ask their competitors? Hey, our sales are down. What are you doing? The competitors aren't going to help them. Do they want to admit to their children, their family, their friends, their parents and relatives, hey, I'm failing right now? Nobody wants to do that. That is a really tough conversation to have. A lot of business owners, it's like a panic. It's like a silent panic where the walls are closing in and they don't know. So for people listening, sometimes one of the best things you can do is share good knowledge with people, even if they haven't expressed that they're having a problem with you. This has been such a valuable call. I think this might be one of those. Victoria, is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I think that about the only thing I'd like to summarize is that it's a process and it's a journey, and really navigate the journey, and it's inner before it's outer. It's an inside job first.
I love that. We can't control the outcomes. All we can do is focus on the processes. And I think that's real true where true success comes from. It's not 10,000 hours, it's 10,000 iterations, which means having a process and doing the same thing over and over and over and over and just fine-tuning the living what out of it. Victoria, people have loved this. If they want to know more about you, if they want to get in touch, what are the best ways for them to connect?
They can touch base with me on LinkedIn. That's one of the great ways to do it, as well as they can contact me through my website, which is www.heartandsoulceo.com. And I have a contact form there. And they can also just say Victoria at the same URL.
That's fantastic. So go check out heartandsoulceo.com, heartandsoulceo.com. Send her an email, Victoria, VICTORIA, at heartandsoulceo.com. You can also look her up on LinkedIn. Victoria, thank you so much. It has been an honor and a pleasure. And I very much appreciate you coming here, sharing with my followers and I, knowing you have your own audience, your own following, your own family, your own clients to take care of. Thank you for coming and sharing with me and mine.
Thank you, Daryl. It's been a pleasure. It's been fun. And I think we opened up some cans of worms while we were at it.
Thank you so much.